Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Ken continues our series, Paul's Letter to the Romans.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Glad you're here. We're in Romans chapter 12, and before I dive into it too much, I just want to ask you these two questions. I'm going to keep asking you these questions, and you better start coming up with an answer. Who's your God? Who's your one? Who's your God? Who's your one? We worship a lot of things in our culture. Sports, jobs, family, money, material possessions, relationships. We're called to love God, and we're called to love others. So who's your one? Who's your one? And by the way, I should not have to be the only one asking that question. So start asking each other that question too. Who's your one? If they don't have a good answer, probe a little bit. Dig a little bit, okay? I'm going to start sicking Noel on you if you don't have a good answer, all right? Well, I don't know if you've come across this author. His name is Philip Yancey. Philip Yancey is one of my favorite Christian writers, and he wrote a book several years ago called What's So Amazing About Grace? And it speaks specifically to where we're headed today as we want to be a church that extends grace. We want to be a place that extends the kingdom of God. And I read this. It's in the very beginning of this book. I encourage you, if you've never read this book, get your hands on it. I will loan this to you. I will give it to you and buy another copy. This book is worth every page. But here's what Philip says right in the beginning, chapter 1. I told a story in my book. He wrote a book called The Jesus I Never Knew. It's a true story that long afterward continued to haunt me. I heard it from a friend who works with a down and out in Chicago, Illinois. Here's the story. A prostitute came to me in wretched straits, homeless, sick, unable to buy food for her 2-year-old daughter. Through sobs and tears, she told me she had been renting out her daughter, 2 years old, to men interested in I won't even read the rest. She made more renting out her daughter for an hour than she could earn on her own in a night. She had to do it, she said, to support her own drug habit. Philip Yancey writes, I could hardly bear hearing this story. For one thing, it made me legally liable. I'm required to report cases of child abuse. I had no idea what to say to this woman. At last, I asked if she had ever thought of going to a church for help. I'll never forget the look of pure, naive shock that crossed her face. Church, she said. Why would I ever go to church? I already feel horrible about myself. They just make me feel worse. And then Yancey writes, what struck me about my friend's story is that women much like this prostitute ran to Jesus. Not away from him. The worse a person tended to feel about himself or herself, the more likely they saw Jesus as a refuge. Has the church, he writes, has the church lost that gift? Evidently, the down and out who flocked to Jesus when he lived on earth no longer feel especially welcome among his followers. What has happened? What has happened? We come to Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 8. It'll be on the screen for you. If you've got your Bible, or you've got it on a tablet or on your phone, you can look it up there as well, but it'll be on the screen for you. Here's what it says. Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 8. Because of the privilege and authority God has given me, Paul, the Apostle Paul is writing this. He says, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Just as our bodies have many parts and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body and we all belong to each other. In His grace, in God's grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy or interpreted to preach, to teach, then speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you're a teacher, teach well. Verse 8, if your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it, what does it say? Gladly. So the first thing I want to talk to you about that I pull out of this passage is humility. Humility. Paul says, don't think you're better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourself, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Some translations say by the faith God has given you. But there's this inclusive corporate sense when he says us. Humility. We talked about humility a couple weeks ago, right? If you think you're humble, you might not be humble. If you like the spotlight, you might need to do a gut check once in a while. I don't know how it came up. I think Kelly and I were talking recently. When I went to church growing up, I was a consummate hypocrite. It's the story of my life. It's why I'm still in ministry today, that I want to help be as authentic with my faith as I can be because of the way I used to live. I was the consummate hypocrite. I'd go to church. I was in a growing church. It was a church plant that was growing. And people figured out that I have a gift for music, so I would sing at least once a month or more. And church, hundreds of people, even got bigger, thousands of people. Oh, wow, man, you can nail it. But I wasn't authentic. I wasn't following God. I thought I was pretty good. I was pretty good. And then one day I got the music schedule in the mail. They planned 3 or 4 months out, and my name wasn't on it at all. And I called the worship pastor at the church. His name was Marv. I said, Marv, what's going on? He said, you're going to have to talk to your father. So I talked to my dad. I said, what's going on? He said, I took you off the schedule. I said, you can't do that. He said, oh, really? You want to have that conversation? He said, you are full of yourself. You don't sing for the right reasons. You've got an amazing voice, but you don't have any love for God. You're a hypocrite. And you're not singing until you get that figured out. Can I just tell you, I was ticked off. I hated my dad. So mad at him. How dare he? I tried to work different angles with the pastoral staff. No, they were like an iron curtain. I had to learn humility. I didn't figure it out quite away. I went to school on a partial baseball scholarship. I was friends with a guy who had a basketball scholarship and a friend who had a tennis scholarship, and we called ourselves the Three Stallions. We thought we were God's gift to the university. I thought I were God's gift to women. When I met Karen, she's like, what a jerk. He is so full of himself. And I was. And God used Karen and other people in my life to break me of this arrogance, of this pride. And Paul says, don't think you're better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourself. You know, if you think you're all that, you're not. On the flip side, I'd say if you think you're not much, you're worth something really significant. I mean, the reality is God used Karen to break me, but God used me to help her. Like, hey, you know what? You're actually valuable. Because she had a brother that just beat her down with his words growing up all the time. Felt really insignificant. Wasn't honored, wasn't valued. And she hates that I'm talking about it right now, so I'm not even looking in that general direction. But true humility says, be honest in your evaluation of yourselves. Have you ever done that? Have you done that lately? Have you just stopped doing all the activity of life for just enough time to say, where am I at with that? How am I coming across to other people? What am I doing that maybe I don't even mean it that way, but it's coming across this way? And I need to fix that. I mean, most of us in the room, have you figured out if we can tackle our blind spots before someone else has to do it, that's always a good thing, right? I hate it when someone has to come to me and, hey, you got a blind spot, Ken. I hate that. Oh, it stinks. So this week I'm watching the news pretty closely, weren't you? You know, police barricades, choppers flying all around, man on the loose. Then you find out he's 60, 70 miles away. And it was a nerve-wracking couple of days. At least it was for me. I don't know for you. Was it, right? And then the story started to come out. You know, I wanted to know, what was the motive? I was talking with my friend Tony on the phone. He and Stephanie were coming here to visit us. And he's like, should we come there or should you come here? And I'm like, well, no, they found him. And, you know, most of those stories, how they end, right? Somebody offs themselves, and you never know what the motive is. So I'm actually glad they found the guy alive, because I'd like to know what in the world he was thinking, or if he was thinking at all. But then the news reports came out about the gentleman who passed away, and it's like, oh, my goodness. And then the other man who survived. You know, I work at Foodies. We serve a lot of Garmin employees. I'm pretty sure I recently served one of those two men from India. I don't know him personally, but my heart just goes out to him. And then I saw a video clip of a man named Ian. And there are a lot of stories I could tell that would illustrate humility, but to me, this clip, it just bled humility. It's all over this 3 or 4 minute piece. So if you haven't seen it, or if you've seen it, see it again and listen to this man's humility as he talked about what happened.
Very grateful that one of the gentlemen is fine and alive. It's terrible what happened to his friend, but I think he was watching over us last night, making sure that we made it through all right. I was told I was incredibly lucky what happened to me. I mean, nearly my carotid artery could have severed my spine, could never walk again, let alone never see my family again. So, just very grateful. Definitely interesting past 24 hours. It was just, it put the biggest smile on my face, and I generally walked through those doors, just seeing them walking, and oh, it was great. I was praying for them all night for both of them. Unfortunately, only one of my prayers were heard. the ability to be able to help with that and give us the opportunity to now hold this child.
Do you hear the humility coming through that piece? Do you hear it? Do you feel it? Don't think you're better than you really are. I love that. I love that some people are trying to call me a hero, right? But I'm just doing what anyone else would want to do in that situation. We're all human. Look forward to seeing this man hold his child. Community. That's another thing I pull out of here. We're many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. Community. So in addition to humility, we go to community. Let's go to that slide. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. Karen and I were living in Pennsylvania, Grove City, Pennsylvania, and we were there from 2007 until 2012. Our boys were in middle school and high school, and there was a lot of drama in Grove City. It was a small town. My sons were athletic. They were starting quarterbacks at the previous place we'd lived. They were, you know, starting on the all-star baseball teams. They were athletic. They weren't incredible, but they were really good. And we moved to a small town, and I'd warned them, hey, you know, we're going to move to a town where kids have been groomed, you know, to be the starters on the baseball team or the football team or the basketball team or whatever team you're going out for, and you're going to move in, and you're going to try and take somebody's spot. You ever had to do that in a small town? Do you know the politics of athletics in a small town? Do you know the politics of athletics in a big town? There are politics in athletics. You guys know this, right? Just nod. Just, yeah, okay, all right, you understand this. Well, that created some controversy in town. My son Mason experienced a death threat. I remember the day Karen said, you say the word, I am so out of here. And I said, God, you know, God has called us to Grove City. I don't like it either. This stinks, but we've got to hang in there. But, you know, as the family's busy and Karen's going to work at the hospital and I'm busy with the church and the boys are busy with school and their athletic involvements and friendships and relationships and all that, our family started to get a little splintered, a little distracted. You ever had that in your family where everyone's kind of going their own way and you got to be very, very, very intentional about grabbing time together? I was asking Karen, we don't remember exactly when it happened, but we know it was in Pennsylvania where there was just some arguing going on in the house, and it might have been me, it might have been Mason, it might have been Marcus, it might have been, I don't think it was Karen. It was definitely me or Mason. We were involved somehow. And Karen had had enough of it. And I don't know, some of you that know my wife, you know, she's a sweetheart. Have you ever seen her mad? Yeah. Have you ever seen her mad? How many of you have never seen my wife mad? Just show of hands. Okay, you don't want to ever see it. I'm just telling you right now. She has a long, long fuse. But that fuse finally burned down. And Karen went off on all of us. And she said, and I'll paraphrase, she said, I don't care what's happening outside this house, but what happens inside this house is of utmost priority. We might not like each other all the time, but we're a family. You might not like each other, but you're brothers. You might not like each other, but that's your son. That's your dad. I'm your mom. And she just went on. You can imagine, right? Some of you have said this somewhere. I can see the way some of you are smiling at me right now. Or you've heard this talk from someone. And she said, we are Team DePeel. And we all were like, I mean, it was a tense moment, but we're like, Team DePeel. And she's like, yeah, Team DePeel. And it stuck. And the reality is, every time we start to get into it with each other, the four of us, we say, hey, Team DePeel. We're on the same team. We're not competing against each other. We're not trying to beat each other. We're actually trying to lift each other up and encourage each other and help each other out. And I hear this in this text. Do you hear it? Where the Apostle Paul is saying to the Roman Christians and the Gentile Christians, the Jewish and the non-Jewish, he's saying, hey, Team Jesus. Community. We all belong to each other. We might be many parts, but we're all parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. So when you're annoyed with somebody in this house, we're on the same team. We're not going after each other. We're not speaking evil against each other. We're not questioning each other's motives. If we got junk, we work it out, right? That's what we do. That's why one of our core values is communitas. It means we fight for each other, for each other, not against each other. Communitas, community, teamwork. Another thing I pull out is variety. So humility, community, and variety. In his grace, Paul says, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. Now, I don't remember it very well. Those of you that know me know I don't have a great long-term memory, and I don't really have a great short-term memory either. But 1973, I was 4 years old, and my mom went in October to give birth to my sister. And so my mom's giving birth to my sister, Kathleen. And she's born, thrilling moment. I was four, I was not in the room. So this has been relayed to me by other people, right? But after she's born, the doctor says to my dad, uh-oh, we have a problem. Now, my mom had gained less weight in her pregnancy with my sister Kathleen than she had with me. I was born in 69. I was born 9 pounds, 3 ounces. I was a big boy. I won't tell you how much weight my mom had gained because I will be forever crucified for saying that out loud. But my mom had gained a lot of weight with me, but not as much with my sister Kathleen. So when the doctor said, uh-oh, my dad immediately was greatly concerned, said, what's going on? And he said, I don't know how to tell you this. There's another one in there. Now, this was at a time when sonograms, right, weren't nearly as popularized as they are now. They didn't know they were having two kids. My mom had baby showers for one child. And now the doctor says, in the heat of the moment, there's another one coming out. So 3.5 minutes later, my sister Rebecca, Becky, Beck, is born. So I don't remember this conversation, but it's folklore in our family's history, right? I called my grandma Jenkins, and I said, Grandma, we have two babies. And my grandma said, Kenny, no. And by the way, you don't call me Kenny, okay? Kenny, no, you have one baby. And I said, no, Grandma, we have two babies. And she said, no, you have one baby. Are you excited? And I said, I'm really excited because we have two babies, Grandma. I have twin sisters, identical twin sisters. And they're grown, they're married, they got kids, right? But it's fascinating. You ever been around twins? God has given us different gifts. Different gifts. You know, my sisters aren't just identical, they're mirror image twins. So what I mean by that is one's left-handed, one's right-handed. The eye issues that they have, they're the opposite. The part in their hair, one's on the right, one's on the left. Their dental work issues, reversed. Mirror image. But when it comes to their intelligence, their IQ, even their EQ, they couldn't be more different. They're both really smart, but there's just different personalities. And you would think identical, even mirror image, like they'd be exactly the same. Anyone raising or raised at least two kids, and you think they're going to be exactly the same? We're with a family last night, and they got two boys. And they're like, man, you think you have one boy, then you have another boy, they're going to be just the same, and they're totally different. Totally different. And Paul says, hey, in the body, yeah, we should definitely practice humility, and we should definitely see ourselves in community, but we should also celebrate the variety, that there are different gifts and talents and abilities that God has given us. It's uniqueness. This uniqueness comes through. Look at this verse in 1 Corinthians, these verses in 1 Corinthians where it says this. Let's go to that slide. It says, now about the gifts of the Spirit, brothers and sisters, I don't want you to be uninformed. There are different kinds of gifts. This is Paul writing to a different letter to a different church, but same topic, right? There are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. Different kinds of service, but the same Lord. Different kinds of working, but in all of them and in everyone, it is the same God at work. God enjoys variety. If I annoy you, guess what? I'm made in God's image. So there's a part of God that's a little bit like me, or I'm like him. All right? If you're annoyed with somebody else, don't forget God made that person. There is variety. Thank you. I appreciate that. I call that a quiet Wesleyan amen. When you're just nodding your head, smile. That's good. And so the question I have for you is, what's your shape? What's your shape? Now, we've conducted an experiment here for the last year and a half. At first, we called it the leadership huddle, and then we changed it and called it disciple makers. And this week, I just want you to know, we killed it. Killed it for a variety of reasons. I'll explain offline if you want to talk about it. But we killed it. We didn't feel like it was accomplishing the purposes for which we designed it. Less and less people were coming out. I think we are in the business of making disciples, but it seems like we have to be more specific with our church about leaning into this issue of shape. Feels like it. I don't know if you're feeling this. If you're not, I would love for you to start feeling this with the staff, with the LAC, and with other key leaders. But I think you might feel like this, we're on the precipice of a new wave of God's Spirit at Olathe Wesleyan. If you don't feel that, pray about that, would you? Because I think this conversation is going to influence the way we respond to this next wave of God's Spirit in the church. And so when I ask, what's your shape? It's not original with me. It's not original with us. Years ago, Rick Warren wrote a book called The Purpose-Driven Church. He's also written the book called The Purpose-Driven Life. It's like the top-selling book in the world except for the Bible. Right? He made so much money off it, he found out how much his church had paid him over 20-plus years of ministry, and he paid it all back and said, I don't want a salary anymore. And my wife and I will just live on the royalties from this book. And he's a pastor in California, a Saddleback church, a guy that comes to our church, Rex. Rex, when he's not here, that's where he goes to church. He goes to church at Saddleback. And they came up with this shape concept that we have spiritual gifts, that's the S. We have heart, like our passion. What's our heart? So spiritual gifts, heart. The A is abilities. What are your unique abilities? What's your personality? Introverted, extroverted? Are you task-oriented, people-oriented, et cetera, et cetera? And then what are your experiences? Not just the good ones, not just the spiritual ones. What are your life experiences? What are your educational experiences? What are your family experiences? What are your horrific, awful, painful experiences? That's you. That's your shape. You've been shaped by all of those things, spiritual gifts, heart, abilities, personality, and experiences. And we're deciding, we're having conversations. Jim, Jeanette, and I are having conversations about, okay, scratch disciple makers. What can we do to lean into this kind of conversation more and more to prepare us for this next wave of God's Spirit? And there have been some great waves here, right? But I'm ready for another wave. How about you? And I want you to feel that, and I want you to pray that with us. And I just don't think that Early Head Start and Family Conservancy came to us and invested in our facilities like they did, and us to just sit back and go, awesome, I think we're supposed to do something with that. I don't think we raised money for the parking lot just to have a really nice parking lot. I think that's setting the table for this next wave of God's Spirit. And I think we've got to talk about your shape and how you're in the game. Here's the thing. God did not call us to sit and soak. He called us to serve. And I know some people have been hurt or wounded by a Christian or a pastor or a church, and so they need a time to sit and soak. They do. They need that. But eventually, after a period of time, and I'm not sure how long it is for different people, eventually you're done sitting and soaking. It's time to serve. It's time to get in the game. And so I read this quote this week from an article that I'm actually going to share on social media this week if you want to look and read the whole article. But it was this quote. It's an anonymous quote, but it was someone once shared with me the definition of hell. And here's the quote. On your last day on earth, the person you became will meet the person you could have become. On your last day on earth, the person you became will meet the person you could have become. And that just got me thinking about me, that got me thinking about my kids, that got me thinking about my marriage, that got me thinking about you and our church and our impact in the community, and saying, are there dormant spiritual gifts? Is there dormant heart passion? Is there dormant ability? Is there dormant personality skills and sets? Is there dormant experiences that our church, that God wants to unleash in us, that if we don't, when we get to the end of our lives and stand before God, He's going to go, why did you not become the person I designed you to become? Why did you not put your shape to work for the kingdom? So the bottom line is, how will you use your shape for His purposes? So we're sitting in staff meeting, we're sitting at teaching team, and Janetta says, that's great, but don't beat people up. I want people walking out feeling uplifted and encouraged and feeling like we can do it. And you need to do, and she told me, you need to do what I'm about to do. And I just want to preface it by this. If I don't mention your name, it doesn't mean I don't think you have gifts and talents and abilities. There's no way I could name everybody. But I just started writing down people that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head. There's a lady in our church, Tressie Newts. You know Tressie? Tressie reaches out to her coworkers, her neighbors, all the time. That's Tressie putting her shape to work. I think about Mark and Denise Brown having Korean students here in their home. You know, it's one thing to have guests for a couple days. It's another thing to have people in your home for 6 weeks. Right? I mean, Tony and I, Stephanie, we're all great friends, but after a few days, you're like, okay, time to go home, right? Time to get back to our own routine. Mark and Denise, wow. I think about Carol Freeman quitting her job at AIG because she believed in this concept that Jim was talking about for immigrant connection and saying, you know what? I might not get paid as much. The routine might not make as much sense, but I've got to do this. Thank you, Carol. I think about Janine Clark leading ESL on Wednesday nights. If you have never been here on a Wednesday night to watch, and Yordi's kind of there too, but it's Janine. She's driving that engine. If you've not been here, just come some Wednesday night and watch Janine lead this conversation with 15 to 25 ESL students. And how she talks about God, how she teaches the Bible, how she encourages and uplifts. That's her shape at work. I think about, is he in the room? Where's Gilbert? Is Gilbert in the room? Gilbert? Where's Gilbert? Gilbert. Gilbert. I think about Gilbert Herrera quietly fixing every facility issue we've ever had in this building. You know, when Pastor Daniel would call and say, hey, Gilbert, we got another problem. Can you get up here? And I know there are other people, but Gilbert, thank you. And I know you're like Karen, you hate that I just said your name out loud, but that's you putting your shape to work. I think about the overwhelming response of the parking lot campaign, the More Than a Spot campaign. I remember telling friends, I'm like, we're a small church, we don't have a lot of resource, and then you guys pledged $265,000 toward the parking lot. That stunned me. I'm not easily stunned. I've been there, done that, seen most things. That stunned me. Thank you for putting your shape to work. Herminia Karp. Herminia Karp is the snack lady at Ridgeview Soccer Club. And every one of those 70 kids, when she's handing out Star Crunches and granola bars and bottles of water, and they're like, "Who? Where's the snack lady today?" Because once in a while she can't make it for various reasons. Herminia is, that's her putting her shape to work. And then she'll say, "You know, oh, these kids would wear me out if I stayed the whole time." But that's her putting her shape to work. You know, I think about Rodney and Jacob Lukehart, who many times are upstairs on Sunday morning serving in 252, taking a turn in the rotation. I think of the whole Lukehart family decorating the facilities at Christmas time and at Easter and other times throughout the year, like just the way that that whole family, it's unbelievable. Andrew Brown, I told you I was going to embarrass you. You know, on Wednesday nights, there are a few really active kids that come to Clubhouse. If you've been here, you know. I'm not going to name them, but you know. There's some very active young boys that come. And Janetta said, Andrew, would you come and just lean into these guys? Would you just come and love on these guys? Keep an eye on them. Love on them, lean into them as we teach Jesus on Wednesday nights. Thank you, Andrew. Way to put your shape to work. I think of Richard and Marcia Thorpe. They're not here today, I don't think. But Richard and Marcia, you know about Run for God. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But do you know, in addition to some of the other things they do, Richard and Marcia, they've identified a local fire station, and they cook meals and take food to the firefighters. And without going into too much detail, they don't have lots of extra resource. So for them to do that, it's actually a real, it's a faith stretch. But they do that consistently. And that's just part of them putting their shape to work. Kelly Bush. Kelly's probably the newest member of my list here, but Kelly showing up and saying, man, I just love students. How could I help? I want to step in and help out with youth ministry because I know what God's done in my life, and I want to help other students experience that as well. Thank you, Kelly. Can't thank you enough. I told Kelly this week, I said, hey, no pressure, but you know, the staff, we're going to Florida for a conference called Exponential, and I said, I'm just praying that God calls you into full-time ministry while we're there. But no pressure, no pressure. But seriously, way to put your shape to work. I really appreciate it. Tim Hugh, Tim, and Angela. Tim, nobody asked him, but Tim identified, he noticed that on Wednesdays, a lot of our staff are here all day, and some of them don't have time to go home, take a break, grab dinner real quick before they come back for Clubhouse or ESL. And he said, hey, I'm just going to start bringing meals in for people who can't make it home. And almost every Wednesday without fail. And it's not just like crummy food. It's like really, I mean, he's a chef. Angela might be a better cook. I don't know. But Tim's a chef. And he's just, that's part of his shape, right? That's how God has shaped him. And he's loved on people through that gifting. Gail York. Yeah, I know. You can hate me later. I didn't even know what to say about Gail. Gail gives in so many ways at this church and has given in so many ways. Just make sure she has coffee. But Gail is an incredibly generous person with her talents up here, but also behind the scenes in some ways you might not even know. That's Gail easing her shape. Like I said, if I didn't name you, it doesn't mean I don't think you have gifts or talents or abilities. I was going to mention Nanette. Nanette might be the person who hates it the most. You know, Nanette, somebody said to me recently, somebody fairly new to our church said, she is always here.
Yes, I know.
She's always here. And this morning I came in, nobody was here. I came in, unlocked the building, got the lights on, turned the music on, made sure the team was set to rehearse. And I'm pulling out to go back home and take a shower and get ready for the day. And who's rolling in? Nanette. Nanette, thank you for the countless ways you have served this church over the years. Appreciate all the ways you used your shape for God's purposes. Appreciate that. I know there are those who prefer not to be recognized, but they give like crazy. And I don't just mean financially. I mean like of their time, their energy, their effort. You're doing stuff outside the church that maybe some people don't know or see or acknowledge or recognize. But remember what the scriptures say. It says God has not forgotten you. He knows what you're doing for the sake of the kingdom. He knows. And those things will not be forgotten by him. There are those, boy, here's one. There are those who have suffered greatly, but because of their painful experience, the E in shape, because of a painful experience, now they look for people going through that same kind of pain so that they can minister to them. That's a rare gift. Actually, one of the secrets Rick Warren says about shape is that a lot of times people are motivated more by the E, the painful E, the painful experiences, than any other part of shape. That's interesting to think about, isn't it? What painful experiences have you had that God wants to somehow redeem? I don't know why it happened to you. I'm not a fan of, well, everything happens for a reason. I'm not. I don't believe that. But I do believe God is redemptive, and he wants to restore and renew so that you can use that for ministry somehow. And there are those who do that so they can privately pray and encourage others. There are prayer warriors in this church who are behind the scenes, laying the foundation through that personal boiler room prayer experience. And if we don't have them, we're dead in the water. There will be no next wave. You know, Daniel, Pastor Daniel's back. And I told him he can make noises. You know how he'll go, mmm. I told him he has free reign to do that as much as he wants today. So, Daniel, here's your opportunity. Sitting with Daniel, and Tony and I had taken some food over to him and then taken some of his food. That was a nice trade-off. Thank you. But one of the side effects of Daniel's surgery is something happened to his arm, to his hand. I don't know if you've heard about this or had him talk to you about it yet, but he'll explain. Something happened. You know, he was on the table for 13 hours. They don't know if it's a pinched nerve, just the way they had to manipulate it. I mean, Daniel's a big guy, and I don't know that they designed surgical tables for, you know, people as tall as Daniel, right? He's just a big guy. So his pinched nerve, I mean, the doctor even said that at one point he was kind of on or leaning into or even sitting on Daniel to do the work that he had to do. It's like, yeah, it was crazy. And so his mobility in his left hand was compromised. That's pretty important because Daniel types. He does a lot of online teaching. And so we're praying that that part will heal. In addition to all the other stuff we're praying that heals, we're praying specifically for that. And making progress. But thinking about that, Daniel is trying to get his hand to do automatically without thinking what at the moment he has to intentionally kind of look at his hand and make it do. You know, most of us, we grab a cup of coffee. We just grab a cup of coffee. We don't think about it. We type an email or shoot a text. We don't think. We just do it. And Daniel's done that in the past too, but now he's having to think about it. And he's trying to retrain, right, those muscles, all those signals going from the brain to the hand so that it happens again automatically without having to think about it, right? So you see where I'm going with this, correct? Where I'm going with this is I want us to be so tuned in to easing our shape that we don't have to think about it. But some of us, our shape, just like Daniel's hand, we're not easing it. Or we're not using it at its full potential. And we're having to retrain ourselves, right? We're having to retrain ourselves. Jim talked about this, right? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, right? Don't step into the cultures and customs of this world, but be transformed. So we have to retrain ourselves to use our shape for His purposes. And we need to do it until we get so good at it that it's just second nature. It happens automatically. But for some of us, as Daniel has had to very intentionally work on picking up pens or paper clips or clothespins or do the finger-touching exercises or even have electric shock in his arm to reawaken that, some of us are going to have to think about this a while before it becomes second nature, before it becomes automatic. Does that make sense? So how will you use your shape for His purposes? Like I said, disciple makers, great experiment. We learned a lot, dead in the water. We'll offer some new opportunities to cover this kind of stuff more. But here's the caveat. Do not wait for a class or a seminar or some thus saith the Lord moment from a pastoral staff member to use your shape. I just listed and named all kinds of people doing all kinds of things that no one even told them to do that. They just did it. And so I say, way to go, church. Let's keep doing it, and let's do more of it. Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more, visit us at olathewesleyan.org or visit us on a Sunday morning for our 10:30 a.m. worship service. Thanks so much.